Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Svetlana Lukova, the author of The Spy Who Changed History, The Untold Story of How the Soviet Union Stole America's Secrets. Well, we're going to MIT with a man named Shumovsky, who is a Soviet war hero, but he's now a master agent assigned like an undergraduate to a prestigious organization that is just beginning to understand the scale of engineering necessary. They live together in housing. All of their money is provided by the Soviet intelligence. Nobody knows that at the time. There are problems in all directions because living in America is comfortable. Svetlana, Shumovsky seems very disciplined, but all of his classmates are not. Are there problems that he needs to solve, or is it left to the INO to solve the problems of the undisciplined students?
Well, he's indeed very disciplined, but unfortunately other people, not only there is too much partying going on at times, which you would probably expect from foreign students abroad, but the bigger problem, which transpires later, is there's plotting going on, because one of the people who is in the same group of with Shumovsky, who's called Chernyavsky, he's a military intelligence officer, and he's there to get the secrets of chemical warfare. But what happens along the way is he begins to meet American Trotskyists. And one way or another, ideas begin to pop up about the need to remove Joseph Stalin. And so not only members of the group having to, you know, report, you know, obviously some unfortunate conversations. But that, in fact, Chernyavsky, who is the member of the group who lives with the Soviet students, is how I come across the whole story, because he ends up, later on in Moscow being interrogated as in part of the investigation of a plot to kill Stalin. And it's during this interrogation that I found out, that I got the documents of, that I found out about the whole operation, how they send the Soviet students to the MIT. So indeed, not only there was drinking and womanizing, but there was also plotting among the group.
All right, Mikhail Chernyavsky, he is a military intelligence officer at MIT, but he's a Trotskyite. Is he the head of the Trotskyites in America? Is he in charge of anything that has to do with either assassinating Stalin or protecting Trotsky? What does he do?
Well, he initially just goes there as, you know, he's a military man. Yeah. He served in the Civil War as well as, and he knows a lot about the fact that, you know, Soviet Union does need, you know, Russian Empire didn't even have gas masks. So, for example, the casualty in the First World War by Russians without gas masks were horrific. So he needs to get everything from the university, including from the MIT, including gas masks, including chemical weapons. And they had the top experts in there. So he goes that he gets sent there, and again on the money that, you know, gets taken away from effectively the mouth of the starving peasants and workers. But he spends his time at the university. He somehow gets engaged in this Trotskyist group. So I don't believe he arrives there as a Trotskyist, but I believe that he started having these ideas about he disagrees with the policies of the Soviet government. And his way to deal with it is not to improve the conditions, you know, for the people, but his way is to start thinking about how can Stalin and other members of the Soviet government be removed. And that's how he becomes, you know, embedded in this Trotskyist group, who then continue directing him upon his return to Moscow later.
This is important because later it's a motive for Stalin to launch the arrests and trials of 37-38, the plot against him by the Trotskyites. And of course, Stalin launches a plot to assassinate Trotsky. So there's a war within a war here. Is Stanislav Shumovsky, is he aware of this conflict with the Trotskyites?
I believe he's aware that there are conversations going on, but he has this amazing ability to be very, very focused and disciplined on the situation at hand, which is he needs to obtain as much information as possible from the MIT, and he's not distracted by politicking. He only has one goal, which is obtain American secrets in order to help Russia to advance its industrial might.
And of all the people we're talking about, he's almost the only one not arrested. Now, we need to finish Ray Bennett. What happens to her after she trains these young men? She goes off. Is that when she goes to Afghanistan, or is that before?
No, she goes to Afghanistan before. Then she comes back to Moscow. Then she trains this young man. She then goes to America on this mission. She goes with her daughter. She goes on this mission to America, and the mission is to she recruits a Japanese person to spy on ships because Soviets were worried about the Japanese ships. You know what they're doing, leaving the harbor, etc., etc. She then comes back from America from this mission, and at the same time, also Chernevsky comes back to America. And what happens is that he, unfortunately, during interrogation, names her as one of the people who participated in this plot. And that's how she gets dragged in into the interrogations.
Right. And she's arrested and sent to the gulag. So the fate of Ray Bennett is wrapped up in Chernyavsky's Trotskyism. But we're going to stay with Smolensky because what's going on now are the secrets of aircraft manufacturing. This is early days. The monoplane was still experimental in many instances. However, a man named Tupolev was in charge of Soviet manufacturing. I learned from Svetlana that, importantly, it wasn't just the aircraft design that they cared about. It was mass production. It was producing enough airplanes fast enough to match the what they believed was Berlin's attempt to create an air force, despite the fact that Berlin was supposed to be living under limitations from Versailles Treaty. So the Soviets were racing the story of Berlin turning out 10,000 a month or whatever they were bragging about. And they wanted the latest design. Now, Tupolev, Svetlana, I've got to tell you, Tupolev is a character who doesn't seem entirely believable. He's completely over the top. And that summer of 1935, Shumovsky is now a graduate of MIT, and he's in charge of Tupolev. Is that right? He's his assignment that summer. Where do they go? What do they do?
That's right. So first of all, you're making a very, very good point. So the objective is dual. One is to get the best possible designs from the American aviation industry. And that includes, for example, high altitude bomber planes. That includes, you know, jets. That includes night vision. That includes how to pressurize the cabin. So all the best new technology Russia needs to obtain it fast. But the second most important thing, and just as important or even more important, which ends up bringing the victory in the Second World War, is how can you produce everything en masse, everything from the airplanes to tanks to rocket launchers. And for that, the Soviet studies, German and British and other techniques, and they could have amazing product. They can have an amazing plane or an amazing tank, but it would be sort of artisanal. So it would be made very, very carefully. It would be of a very high quality, but you could never produce enough of them. So what the Soviets did is they studied the Ford method of mass production, which is that you, first of all, they studied everything from how the factory floor is organized, how the machinery is organized. And they also had a very similar experience that America had, where America had a lot of unskilled immigrants who needed to, you know, you needed to be able to produce this technology a lot of, but also with relatively unskilled labor, which is why you'd use the machinery. And Soviet Union basically had peasants and workers who were yesterday's peasants, also brought in mass into towns, also to, you know, work on these factories. So you didn't have this sort of artisanal type workforce, and also you needed to produce a lot of things. So the way that they went about it is it would be I don't know, the wheel would be put together in one plant, the wing would be put together in another plant, and then you bring it all together and you produce quickly and everything is changeable. And these are the methods and techniques they need to learn. So that what happens is that Shumovsky first studies as much as he can at the MIT, but he also makes a lot of contact with people who would go on to work at the aviation factories. And then when Tupolev arrives in America in summer 1935, he takes Tupolev to all these aviation factories to meet his friends, either he knew at the MIT or from other, you know, basically from the aviation field. And Tupolev, and there's an amazing picture of Tupolev and Shumovsky standing by the side of the road. So they hire a car and they just drive America, you know, kind of like a boys' road trip. And Shumovsky's holding a camera, so they're recording everything. They're recording how the floors are arranged. So there is nothing which is too small of a detail for them. So they go from how the factory is organized to the very latest technology.
All right. Shumovsky graduated MIT June of 34. And this is the summer of 35. What many people would ask at this point, and I was one of them, where's the FBI? Where's counterintelligence? Where are the Americans watching the major Soviet airplane designer go back and forth across America? I think he said they traveled 3,500 miles. Is anybody watching them?
No. And that's, John, a very, very interesting question, because that goes to the heart, as an intelligence historian, I can tell you, of the U.S. intelligence failure against Soviet Union. And this even can be traced, you know, to how they missed the fact that the Soviet obtained the atomic bomb. And this even goes to today, which is that it's always been presumed by Americans, for reasons that I can't explain, that the Russian espionage is political, that they're going to somehow interfere in American politics. But there's literally little to no evidence that that actually ever happened. So I think once, maybe in 1930s, I think they paid a senator and that didn't work out for them. But the rest of the time, they were not interested. And what the FBI were always looking at is they were always looking at the Americans that the Russians, you know, they thought recruited, or they were looking at political intervention. But that wasn't happening. Became clear very quickly is that the communism is not going to be able to come to America. So Stalin did not consider that a priority. He didn't want to change capitalism into communism. And in fact, he had problems with the Communist Party of America, who actually had political goals. Stalin's only goal and Soviet Union only goal was to get hold of the technology. So that's why the FBI were focused on the wrong things. They did not understand the big plan of Stalin and his spies, which is to take by steal American technology.
Svetlana Lakova is the author of The Spy Who Changed History. When we come back, Shirley Temple. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend, because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right Rug.